This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay
News.
News
Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9 with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt. Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in our news over the past week and how they impact on you, on us and on our community. And on tonight's show, we have the not yet declared winner of the state seat of Melbourne, Jennifer Cannis. And she's with us in the studio and will be able to respond to your questions if you want to email them in or phone us on 1300 JOY 949 or on air at joy.org.au. We're going to have a quick chat about Olympian Natalie Cook, discuss homophobia in rural areas, and do our icon of the week as usual.
You're listening to Gay News Week. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair at joy.org.au. Call 1300 JOY 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay News Week.
Good evening. At the weekend, a by-election in the state seat of Melbourne was held, triggered by the retirement of Labor MP Bronwyn Pike. The state seat of Melbourne has been held by Labor since Federation and has always been a strong seat for the Labor Party. This year, however, the race was tight, with most betting agencies saying Greens member Cathy Oak was most likely to win. One online betting agency even started to pay out bets to the Greens before voting had even started. Following the counting of postal votes and the incorporation of preferences, the Victorian Electoral Commission is expected to declare the winner of the by-election as Jennifer Cannis, with the Greens' Cathy Oak conceding defeat on Twitter yesterday. Our guest tonight is the new member-elect for the state seat of Melbourne, Labor MP Jennifer Cannis. Jennifer, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to Gay News Week.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations from all of us here. It has been a very interesting run for you. But just to give us a bit of an idea of who you are and where you've come from, you want to give us a quick rundown of your history so far?
Sure. Look, a lot of listeners will probably know me from my work on Melbourne City Council. I've been a councillor since November 2008. And in that role, I've been involved in a number of programs and events, including the Queer Film Festival and Midsummer, and which council have been supporters of for a number of years. And also, of course, Joy is located in City Village here, which is owned by the City of Melbourne, that we rent out to community groups, creative groups, and Joy FM. So that's been a really terrific thing that I've been working on at council. When I'm not at council, I'm a lawyer, and I work at Holding Redlich, or did work at Holding Redlich until I've just resigned this week. And my area of practice has been employment and industrial relations and anti-discrimination work, where I've mainly worked for employees and for union members as well. And that's been a really interesting area of work for me. And I think the Equal Opportunity Act is one of those acts that Rob Hulls, when he was Attorney General, did a whole lot of reform for. And I guess it was disappointing to see the Baillieu government, when they came into power, make what I think are some backward steps in relation to that legislation.
Yes, yeah.
You know, particularly, as I assume your listeners will know, the amendments that have now made it lawful for certain employers to discriminate against people because of their sexuality.
Yeah, it has been a great disappointment to people in our community to have that backward step.
I think so. And you know, you sort of think, what's the point? But, you know, and it is sort of disappointing to see that happen when you think about all the achievements that have been made. And I think that one of my, you know, I've got very big shoes to fill with Bronwyn Pike.
Yes.
She was a terrific supporter of your community and was a great advocate for GLBTI issues and law reform in government.
Certainly when we were doing a introductory piece before the election, which was on, I think, our first show, so we didn't get a chance to try and get you in pre-election, we did a bit of a wrap-up of Bronwyn, and, yeah, certainly she was a great friend politically of our community and will be missed. So we hope you fill those shoes well.
Yes, look, I do.
No pressure.
No. But, no, I think it is important to acknowledge the work that Bronwyn Pike did.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Coming to the election, it was interesting to a lot of us out here in the cheap seats that the Liberal National Coalition chose not to contest. What are your thoughts around that and how it influenced the election and, I suppose, the electors?
Look, in some ways it was interesting that they chose not to contest, but they haven't contested the last two by-elections that we've had. They didn't contest Broadmeadows, they didn't contest Nidri, so it's not surprising that they didn't contest Melbourne. And, you know, can only suppose that the reason why they didn't was because they didn't really want to have that test and that they were a little bit concerned about what would happen to the Liberal Party vote. But what it did do was make this election unlike any previous elections for the state seat of Melbourne. Look, there wasn't a Liberal Party candidate, but there were 16 candidates, which I think is one of the, if not the largest field of candidates for a by-election ever. And I think that had its challenges for the electorate. We were talking earlier about how many informal votes there were.
And yeah, certainly. Coming down to some numbers, the informal vote was just above 9%, and so a lot of people didn't show up, and the attendance rate at the election was about 67%. So there's about 43% of the people who didn't cast a formal vote in the election, which seems a lot in a country where we presume that we have compulsory elections where people haven't shown up and those that have, a lot of them have voted informally. Can you talk to that a bit?
Look, the voter turnout was low, and I think that had a lot to do with it being the middle of winter. It being a by-election where while I obviously knew it was on and people who were interested in politics knew it was on, but, you know, there's no TV ads, no radio ads about it. So I think a lot of people who, you know, aren't necessarily so tuned into politics weren't really aware that it was on, even though I think it was pretty hard to miss. So, you know, it's not surprising that there's a low voter turnout in a by-election. But the informal vote as well, I think, is interesting. 16 candidates is a lot of candidates, and I think a lot of people, when they get to the ballot box, have this ballot paper and they have a how-to-vote card, but it is really easy to put, you know, two number threes or two number fours, or to miss, you know, to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and all those things make your vote invalid. And I think that, you know, those mistakes are really easy to make.
I suppose for the explanation to the listeners, having scrutineered at a couple of elections for a candidate, if you miss a box or if you put two numbers, your vote is informal. So the more people you have on the ballot, the easier that is.
Yes, yeah. And also, you know, if people's handwriting isn't clear, sometimes you don't, you know, if a 4 or 7 can get muddled up.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
You're on Gay News Week with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt, and we're talking to Jennifer Cannis, member-elect for the City of Melbourne.
That's not the City of Melbourne.
Oh, sorry.
The state seat of Melbourne.
State seat of Melbourne. Sorry about
local
that.
Local government elections are October.
Oh, wow. I will get there. So, of course, this was a two-horse race, really, is what it came down to. But, of course, on party-preferred votes, which is where you managed to get over the line, do you think with the preferences, of course, that the parties had decided on, that made it, of course, made a great deal of difference, and with the sex party actually giving preferences to the Labor Party?
Look, it was always an election where no candidate was going to get over 50% of the vote. So it was always going to come down to preferences. And indeed, the sex party did pretty well. I think they got around 9% of the vote.
About seven.
About seven. So their preferences did flow to me, and that was important. And that was one of the preference swaps that we did do in this election. And I think that they were an important block.
Of course, with that as well, I mean, within our community, that with it being known that Labor as a party as a whole is giving preferences to Family First, it does make it a little bit.
Look, I think I need to sort of clarify the giving preferences, yep. Because indeed that's not right. We didn't give preferences to Family First, and we didn't do a preference swap with Family First. There were 16 candidates, and we did preference swaps with a couple. And if you didn't bring in a copy of our ticket, but what we did was we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then after we got to 5, we just went straight down the ticket in sequential numbers, yep. Because of what we were saying before about the possibility for, or you know, the high likelihood with informal votes. So that's how we did our ticket, because we thought it was really important to make sure that people who voted Labor had the highest, you know, ability to have a formal vote. So we didn't do a preference swap with Family First, but we did do preference swaps with Burhan Ahmed and the Sex Party.
On to a slightly different issue. Though this was a state election, there is some ideas out there that there is an overlap, or that issues affect voters from federal to state elections and vice versa. What's your view on that? And it was particularly noticeable that as the only election going on in the country, that Julia Gillard was absent from your entire campaign. And I can't think of a previous election where a Prime Minister would have been absent. Can you comment on those issues?
Oh, look, I don't think the Prime Minister was involved in either of the previous by-elections in Victoria, the one in Nidgeri or the one in Broadmeadows. And we did, you know, argue and fight this by-election on state issues, and indeed federal parliament was sitting until quite late into the campaign. But I think it's really important that voters concentrate as much as they can on the topics and the issues for the parliament that they're voting on, because it is easy to get confused, and we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that people got the message that this was a by-election. We're talking about state government, we're talking about Ted Bailu, you know, things like TAFE, housing, health, mm-hmm. education, they're some of the really important issues to be focusing on, and we didn't want to detract from what we saw as the important issues in the election.
I wonder, is with this election, it was a very close race, really. Do you think people sometimes get confused about federal issues and federal Labor and then relate them back and almost kind of blame you as a state member for those problems that they're having at federal level?
Look, sometimes, and I think you need to, you know, be aware that, you know, federal matters do influence people's voting intentions. But we really did, you know, our utmost to focus on state issues. And interestingly, you know, I think I made over 5,000 phone calls to people during the campaign, and door knocked on a lot of doors. And people were talking to me about state issues. And when they got off state issues, they wanted to talk to me about local issues. About local government issues. Oh. So they didn't talk to me very much about federal issues. But, you know, these things do influence people.
I think that's one of the great things that has been said about you during this campaign is you were actually out there talking to your constituents about their feelings and about where they wanted the party to go and where they wanted you to go. So that's one thing that, you know, is you to be very commended for, is quite often a lot of people feel very isolated from their local members, and this was a chance for them to actually really get and meet you up close and personal and discuss with you their issues.
Look, it was really interesting talking to so many people, and a lot of the time when I'd make a phone call, people would say, oh, you know, it's you, it's the candidate, and they wouldn't expect it, and they'd be really chuffed to get the call. And look, it's what I intend to keep on doing. Look, I had a couple of days off this week. The poll gets declared tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. And for me, it's really back down to business and talking to people. We've got just over 2 years until the next general election for Victoria, and my aim is to make sure when the Labor Party goes to that election that we've put forward a full range of policies for all of Victoria, but that the people of Melbourne's aspirations are reflected in those policies.
And the great thing that we can feel very confident of within our community is we have someone supporting us that, as a member of the City of Melbourne, has worked so closely within the JLBTI community, as you said, within Midsummer Queer Film Festival, and also as a supporter of Joy, that we can feel confident that we have someone within the party, within the City of Melbourne, that has worked within the City of Melbourne in our state level.
Yeah, and I think it's an important thing to make sure that, you know, progressive candidates are put forward and are elected and have the capacity to influence government, because without people, you know, talking about those matters, it is easy for them to just be sidelined.
Fantastic.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. We'll be back in a moment to talk a little more with you, Jennifer, if you're prepared to stay for another little bit. And I'm going to ask you about areas of particular policy interest.
Joy 94.9.
Hey, what are we going to say in the promos for our show?
Well, what more do we need to say?
Isn't it obvious? Well, we're gay.
And we're talking about news.
And we're doing it every week.
Gay News Week.
Join Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt with Gay News Week every Wednesday at 7 here on Joy 94.9.
And we are back, and as the announcement just said, it's Matt and Sammy and Jeffrey, and we're on Gay News Week with Jennifer Cannis, who is the member-elect for the seat of Melbourne. I indicated before the break, Jennifer, that we were going to ask you about areas of particular policy interest going forward and things that you particularly want to focus your time on.
Well, it's an interesting question, because in state government there are so many interesting things to be involved in. I mean, it's your health and education and housing. But I guess one of the things that I'm really keen to look at, and I'm a great believer that government can make a positive difference to people's lives and provide people with opportunities. And that's one of the key things that I'm looking to do, whether those opportunities be education or whether that opportunity is just an opportunity to, you know, express yourself and have freedom of expression. I think that some of those things are really interesting things that government can be involved in and can make a real difference to people's lives.
That's fantastic. Well, we just would like to thank you very much for the time that you have given us this evening, for coming into Joy, and it's giving everyone a chance to get to know you a little bit better as we see you hearing tomorrow at 10 o'clock when the polls finally get announced. And, of course, very shortly that you will be going in to be sworn in. Will that happen within the next week, will it? You're expecting that?
Parliament sits the 14th of August, so that's when the swearing in will happen in that week.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you the best of luck with everything, and we look forward here at Gay News Week to having you in again.
Thank you.
And
I'd love
letting
to
us
come
know
back.
How it's going.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. Talk to us. Call 1300 Joy 949. Email onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427 Joy 949.
You're listening to Gay News Week. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300 Joy 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay News Week.
We've
had a couple of SMS and emails in. Thank you very much for your support, guys. Caroline, also Tristan, Dean and Mason from Preston, just basically letting us know that they're enjoying the show. And now here's Matt with our next story.
Thanks, Sammy. Gold medal beach volleyballer Natalie Cook has declared that she'll perform a protest if a female isn't appointed to the position of flag bearer on Friday's opening ceremony for the 2012 London Olympics. Cook came out this week saying if a female isn't carrying the flag for Australia for the ceremony, she would sit in protest. Australian chef de mission Nick Green, who's in charge of deciding who will carry the flag, says he won't be bullied into appointing a female. Cook also came under fire from Lindsay Gaze and Dawn Fraser, but Cook returned serve, saying that she believes she would be an inspiration to women and Gaze if she were to be appointed as flag bearer.
I think this is actually quite an interesting story that's been raised. I mean, we have had the last, she's coming up to her fifth Olympics now. Mm-hmm. The last four times she has marched behind a man. So I can understand, but to me, they're athletes. It's not about the actual sex of the athlete. Even for me, coming as a, you know, an independent woman, if I was lucky enough to be representing my country, regardless of the sport or the event, I would be proud to be representing my country, regardless of who was actually carrying the flag. And I do understand that there's a lot of importance to that, but
I'm really interested to hear that from you, Sammy, because I would have thought out of all kind of the people that, and I know you're giving me that look.
You are looking with absolute shock. I know. I can see that.
I know, but I'm almost of the belief that maybe it's time to let a female have a go. And why does it have to be always men?
I think it would be really lovely. And of course, you know, I would love to see Natalie do it. I mean, not only is she a great sportswoman, she's a great representation of an Australian sportswoman, but she's also a member of our community. So to me, I would go, yes, that would be awesome. I would celebrate along with everybody else in our community that one of us has got to carry the Olympic flag, because considering there's so many out athletes. But coming from someone who has competed in high level sport as a junior, I did athletics and I mixed, and I was in the Australian Institute of Sport and mixed with a lot of these athletes that have been out competing. We get the recognition on our performance and our ability to do our job. It doesn't matter what sex we are. So for me, coming as an athlete, I would feel privileged enough to be a member of the team and be proudly marching behind whoever was selected to carry the flag, regardless of the sex.
Fair enough.
I think it's a really interesting one, because I think she's put herself in an interesting position by coming out and saying that she thinks it should be a woman, and secondly, that she thinks that she should be eligible for the job, because she's effectively backed her chef de mission into a corner where if he appoints a woman or he appoints her, it'll look like he's done that because he's been pressured to, and that will decrease his authority. So he's in a position now where if he appoints a woman, which he might in fact have done anyway, it's going to look like he did it because of pressure from her, and if he appoints her, it'll look like the squeaky wheel gets the grease, that you whinge enough and you actually get appointed, and that might not be his intention either. So I just don't know how the poor chef de mission actually proceeds with that.
Well, actually, the chef de mission actually came out. Nick Green came out, and I was reading an article. I think it was in the Herald Sun that, and he said that
a reliable source,
absolutely
right. Moving on, and said that Natalie Cook was actually one of the people that he was considering, along with males as well. So she was already kind of on the radar of Nick Green, saying, yeah, I might choose her, but at the same time said he won't be bullied into appointing
a female. I think it's going to be a bit of a case now. Is he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't choose her, if he doesn't choose a woman, he's going to have a lot of people that are very supportive of women in sport, which of course I am, absolutely, positively. But like I said, it's about being on the team and being proud. There is just as many men out there. I mean, the rower that has been to six Olympic Games has purposely taken himself out of the running and said, you know, I don't want to be considered for the flag, even though he was up to be considered. And for him as an athlete, he actually hasn't attended any of the opening ceremonies of all the Olympics that he's been to, and he had no intention of actually attending this one. And that's the reality that a lot of people don't realise. When you actually are watching the opening ceremony of the Olympics, a lot of the athletes that are competing within the first couple of days of the Olympics are not marching in the opening ceremony, because having spoken to friends of mine that have competed at the Olympics, it is a very, very huge event. And as an athlete, it's extremely draining. So you actually don't want to, you're so focused on your sport, you're at the echelon, you're an elite athlete.
Particularly in previous Olympics where they've been marching around a hot and steamy oval or event centre for quite a while. That's less likely in London, given the weather forecasts.
Well, London's in the middle of a heat wave at the moment.
And, it's but, I mean, 30 not, degrees.
Yeah, well, that's a heat
yeah,
wave in
not
London.
Really a heat wave.
So that notwithstanding, yeah, it's a huge drain. So a lot of them aren't there.
But also, too, back to, you know, the fact that it'd be wonderful to see a member of our community. When we're talking about that, there's, you know, I think over 10,000 athletes at the Olympics, we've just found that there is there's basically only just over 20 out athletes at the Games. So it is wonderful to see someone being considered that is an out athlete.
In terms of the numbers, I think we had a quick chat about this one or two weeks ago where we said there were 15 or 18 out. The list has been updated and now there are 21 open athletes out of the some 10,000 that are competing. So the number is pretty low, which is not to say that's all the gay athletes that are there. That's to say that
these
they
are the
ones
that, are out,
that have
yeah.
declared themselves as being out. So,
and Russell Marks was right. Out of the out gay athletes, we have a lesbian couple of triathletes from France.
So we have one,
but there is also no proof. We haven't yet been able to find whether they're rooming together. So I'm sorry, Russell.
I wonder, so one couple, that constitutes the tons of gay couples
yes,
that are in the Olympics?
Yes, tons of gay couples, because of course we're going to take over the world.
Apparently.
And interestingly, Russell Marks is one of the people who is up for carrying the flag, because this is, I believe, his sixth Olympics. So it'll be a very interesting choice if the Chief de Mission actually chose him, given all of the controversial statements he's made over the recent week or two.
Yes, no, it's going to be actually really quite interesting. But the thing is, I suppose, is we are on the eve of athletics, of Olympics actually starting. Tomorrow will be the announcement of the flag bearer. So we actually need to keep our fingers crossed. You know, of course, we're hoping for a woman. But for me, at the end of the day, I am hoping for them to actually choose someone that's incredibly suitable for the job. And, you know, we just want it to be an athlete that we're all proud of and say, yes, stand up, clap hands and think that it's wonderful. Of course, it'd be nice for it to be an athlete.
Definitely, most definitely. And it's not a matter of being male or female. It's who's the best to represent the country.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300 JOY 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay Newsweek. You're listening to Gay Newsweek. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair@joy.org.au. Call 1300 JOY 949. Find us on social media. Send a message via pigeon. Scream from the other side of the street. Throw stones at the window. This is Gay Newsweek.
It's Gay Newsweek with Matt and Sammy and Jeffrey. So, Matt, what's up?
Thanks, Jeff. Jeffrey, a Baptist pastor in Victoria's southwest is coming under fire after refusing to remove an anti-gay messages from the window of his church. Reverend Trevor Walmsley currently has an electronic message board with two messages reiterating his anti-gay stance. One message reads, "You are here because God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve." And the other says, "None of us owe existence to same-sex sexual relationships." Speaking to the Herald Sun, Reverend Walmsley says, "I suppose they're a little bit controversial, but I am very much in support of marriage as it is, as it has been traditionally known." Reverend Walmsley has not only come under fire from the public, but also from his own church. Australian Baptist Ministry spokesman Reverend Rod Benson labelled the illuminated signs as childish and distanced himself from the controversy.
I find this typical of, you know, of course, you know, we always are hearing about religious right-wing people just out there proving that we don't deserve to be here. Mm. But I'm also finding that with a lot of things that are happening in rural areas that, you know, maybe we're starting to see a little bit of a symbiosis between, you know, living, you know, in a rural community and being an out gay person, because we're starting to see, you know, a few more things coming out now.
I think that we are seeing more people in the outer areas that are gay, and I think that's probably causing a few more of these reactions from people that are very conservative in the country areas. We certainly don't see things like this in the big inner city urban areas these days, and that's good. But I think there is a long way to go in terms of homophobia and discrimination, and in fact, gay violence, I suspect, or violence against gay people when you get into the rural areas. So this is just emblematic of that, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what you guys have to think about this topic. That basically, so at a federal level is debating the issue of same-sex marriage. The coalition and the right of politics basically have said we don't believe same-sex marriage should be a thing, basically, because we believe in the traditional meaning of marriage. What do you guys think about maybe a lot of maybe homophobic people using that as kind of an excuse to say no to us? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's, you know, someone that is homophobic will use an excuse for their actions. It's like someone that's a racist or someone that's a bigot will use excuses for their actions. And people are just using this as something that's in the news and as a current thing that a lot of people are talking about. And, you know, I'm a homophobe and, you know, and I can act the way I want to act because I don't want you to get married. Well, you are the way you are and you can't use an excuse for your actions.
I think it's particularly instructive when you start looking at each one of the arguments that are put forward by people that are homophobic, and you start drilling them down and examining them, and you actually find most of them don't hold up to scrutiny. The idea that there is a traditional view of marriage only holds true if you draw a line in the sand with where you declare traditional is. So if you go back 50 or 100 years, yeah, you're probably right. But if you go back further than that, well, then there have been different definitions of marriage over time. And that disconnect between the reality happens with most of the arguments within homophobia is if you deconstruct them, if you analyse them, they don't actually hold up to scrutiny. And so what you end up with is people just having to fall back on a blind faith argument and the Bible as justification in its own right, because you can clearly argue against pretty much every other homophobic excuse.
I think the thing that we are starting to see more is reports of homophobic bullying, violence, what have you, in rural areas, is because we are getting people now being more comfortable with being out and being out in their community. Rural areas tend to have a little bit slower in coming around and seeing the way that life actually really is. You know, myself, I'm from a rural area. I haven't experienced that within my area because I've been involved with my local community for, you know, my entire life. But I do hear of it happening a lot. You know, last year we had one of our out comedians was in a rural area and, you know, was a victim of bullying and violence. Of course, you know, it has come back that, you know, the younger members of the community were actually quite shocked that there were youth within them that were actually quite up, you know, they were actually quite upset that they had youth within their community that were so homophobic. But, you know, again, it's happening in rural areas as much as it's happening within the city.
I'm inclined to say you said that they were surprised that youth were very homophobic. I've got to say it's not uncommon. There are a lot of people out there among my age kind of thing. I'm around 18 years old, and there are a lot of people that they've kind of seen these views from their parents, from what I understand, and they've been passed down to these people, and they think that's the way it should be.
So, of course, that's a real issue that we are facing, is that education does roll on. It's what's happening in the home. It's what the kids are actually seeing. You know, not long ago, I was on the train heading home and, you know, I catch the train, you know, on the Epping line, you know, and I was sitting on the train and there was a gentleman there with his young child, 2-3 years old in the pusher. They're reading the paper together. And he was spouting homophobic comments and the young child was repeating it. So, you know, for me, I was on a pack train. Normally, if I was in a safe area, I'd sort of, you know, give them a look, possibly say something, but, you know, not knowing where this gentleman was getting off and whether I was going to be safe getting off in the dark on the train by myself, if he was going to go further with his comments. But it was quite distressing for me as a parent to actually hear someone talking like that and having his young child parroting exactly what he said. And that will then go into this child being older.
Exactly.
And the bullying continue when he gets to school.
And that's a scary thing. A lot of it is coming from parents, and parents that should be teaching their children to love and accept people for who they are, for things that can't be changed. And to think that these children are growing up and going to adopt those attitudes, it's a scary thing.
I think that brings us back to the beginning of the discussion a little bit, that these things are changing, but they're changing slowly, and they're changing from the inner city out, I guess. And so all of the progressive arguments and tolerance and acceptance, which is an extension of tolerance, will happen at a later point in time in the rural areas, and it's a long way away. We're over to the next issue now, so
I think Sammy's going to run us through our icon of the week this week. Sammy?
Okay, our icon of the week is we're playing ode this week to Becky Cole, who, of course, is a country music artist on this week on ABC's Australia Story, has actually come out and announced that she is gay. And we actually got a little track to play from one of her songs.
I live life a little too close to the edge. You won't ever find a halo on my head. I still stand up for the things that I believe. There's times the devil on my shoulder gets to me. Sometimes exactly what you see is what you get. You think you know me, but you ain't seen nothing yet. I look more toward the future than the past. I still try to live each day like it's the last.
That was Becky Cole with Rainbows. Now, that's quite interesting because she's talking about loving who she wants to love and being who she wants to be. Now, she's actually performed in the Australian Army in Iraq, supporting the troops. And
Wasn't it in Afghanistan?
No, the information that I actually received was from her was from Iraq. So
I misread.
When she actually came, the interesting story is when she actually came back from performing for the troops, is she received a letter from a fan saying that they were quite upset with her as a performer going over there and performing for the troops because she was showing support for the war. And she was actually quite disheartened by that because she actually went over there to actually support the troops, not support the what was actually happening over there. So she actually then wrote a song which has actually gone to number one on the Australian Country Music Channel, which is called Poster Girl Wrong Side of the World, which basically explains because the person that actually wrote the letter said that they were so disheartened by it that they were going to be taking a poster off the wall. So, yeah, it's actually really quite good. But the thing that I love so much about this story is there is so few out female country music artists. So not only can we add another one to the list, but we're actually adding a woman to the list, so an Australian. So I think it's absolutely fantastic.
I think the poster off the wall comment is really important because it's going to be interesting to find out whether she loses or gains fans as a result of coming out, because it is a very conservative community in country music, so it'll be interesting whether she gets more listeners or whether a lot of those conservative listeners out there do in fact take her picture off the wall as one of their stars because she's come out and she's no longer a straight woman in their eyes.
I think it's really interesting. There's kind of a rise in this in popularity is people within music and high up in their idolised people that they are starting to support marriage equality, same sex, and kind of like the gay rights civil movement. Like, for example, last week we were speaking about Murs and his song, and he was our icon of the week last week for his song that kind of approach the issue of homophobia out there, and especially within the hip-hop community, I think it's actually really interesting that that this is kind of rising up.
Well, she said, I mean, she's single and she's a strong supporter of gay marriage, much like Magda. So for her, it was also an important reason for her to be able to come out. And of course, you know, she's got a 13-year-old son, and she had her son say to her, you know, he's bringing a friend home, and he's been very, very supportive. You know, when he was interviewed as well, he said, you know, my mum's the way she is. She can love who she wants because she was born this way. But when she was first making the decision to actually come out publicly, her son actually said that he had a friend coming over, and it's okay, mum, you know, they don't know about you. So she sort of had made the decision that it was the right step for her to actually make, because she didn't want her son to feel like she was hiding and there was a reason why she should be hiding. So, you know, she's got great support within the music community as well. I mean, her neighbours are Casey Chambers and Gina Jeffries, and, and you know, they actually spend a lot of time together. Her and Casey have actually known each other since they were young teenagers. And the interesting thing is Casey Chambers' first song that she ever wrote was called Becky, and it was actually written about Becky Cole.
Was it really?
So, and Casey said that she actually didn't know at all about Becky until Becky actually told her recently. So, you know, she's still got that wonderful support with her friends who are also fellow entertainers. So it's really lovely to see someone that's been so strong in coming out and has great support within the community.
And we need to hope that her record sales and that her popularity remains as it is, or gets better as a result of this decision, and that there are no adverse consequences.
Well, so
Watch this space, I guess.
That's right. Well, she has said, I just want to be who I am and hope people still want to listen to my music. And if they don't, well, maybe they didn't like it that much in the first place. So kudos to her.
Definitely, very much. You are listening to Gay Newsweek right here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Tanya Plibersek on Gay Newsweek with Sammy, Jeffrey and Matt on Joy 94.9.
This is Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9. Talk to us. Call 1300-JOY-949. Email onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427-JOY-949.
This is Jeffrey, and I'm here with Sammy and with Matt, and this is Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9. We're just going to do a couple of other things after our really jam-packed show today. We just want to do a little promo for Dean Beck's On The Line. He, in the studio, is talking with Dr. Pippa Grange, who is the General Manager or ex-General Manager for Culture and Leadership in the AFL Players Association. She's going to be talking about homophobia in sport and the AFL's inaction in that regard. During the show, your questions can be sent in to onair@joy.org.au or by calling after midday 1300-JOY-949.
That'll be actually a very interesting chat, actually. I saw the article during the week in The Age, I think it was, and it was a discussion of her basically saying about how the AFL, that it's not a priority anymore with, like, battling homophobia in the AFL. It was actually a very interesting article, and I'm very interested to hear what Dean Beck has to say about it.
I think this is going to be fantastic. And also, she's actually going to be in the studio for you know, I think nearly half an hour. So for her to be able to come in here, and she's looking forward to be answering questions from the public, and there's going to be quite a bit of time for them to actually discuss content. And I think it's going to be really, really good for us to get a really good insight into the AFL's thoughts on the way that they actually think about homophobia and where we actually can go from here. And she's interested in people's feedback on that as well.
And certainly the AFL has their policy on homophobia, which they've had for quite a period. But the level of work that they've put into it, including workshops, which are compulsory for players and staff, and funding that has gone into a lot of projects that they put into violence against women, women's safety and race issues haven't been applied to the same degree for matters around homophobia. So it'll be interesting to hear her reflections on that and see what questions Dean comes up with to ask her about that, and how that interview goes. It'll be really interesting.
And the other thing that he, of course, will be playing will be his interview that he has had with Mark Butler, MP, about
GLBT aged care.
So that'll be fantastic. So tune in, Joy 94.9.
But unfortunately for our show, Gay News Week, here on Joy, we've all run out of time.
We want to say a special thank you to Jennifer Cannis, a member-elect for the seat of Melbourne in the state election, who came in and spent some time with us tonight.
We want to say a big thank you to everyone who joined the conversation tonight, and a thanks to our technical producer, Matt Knox, Nock for pressing the buttons for us.
And if at any time throughout the week you want to get in contact with us, suggest topics even, or maybe even comment on what we've spoken about tonight, you can email us, gaynewsweek@joy.org.au, or head to joy.org.au and find our page there.
Here's news. They say no news is good news, right? But no news means no Gay News Week. And that would be bad news. Bad, bad news. So for news you can't refuse, choose Gay News on Joy 94.9. Now there's something for you to muse.
That rhymes.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.